Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Nathan Totten.
And I'm Nick Harrison. Today we have...
Michael Washam.
Michael is a... are you going to introduce yourself?
I should. I'm a technical evangelist on the same team as these guys. And if you may or may not know, I've been working on PowerShell commandlets for past 6-7 months. So today we're going to demo some of the new stuff that we came out with in the last release. It's been a few weeks, but we're finally got around to actually talking about it.
Cool. So before we move into the demo, let's cover the news. It hasn't been a huge week in Windows Azure. We only have two news stories, but one of them is pretty significant.
Yeah,
so let's pull that up. So our first news story is we announced last, I think it was Thursday or Friday, we announced the Windows Azure Media Services preview. So basically a set of like a whole suite of media services for like streaming video to
encoding
encoding video, like editing, a whole set of APIs to kind of automate this process that's normally been pretty complicated of like hosting, you know, say you want to host your own TV channel or we could
Netflix, maybe style.
I don't know, we'll probably move Cloud Cover there eventually,
right.
Maybe
that's
but
right.
But so like all kinds of things you can, you know, do like API editing to like put ads in your videos and all kinds of crazy things.
Let's
like
check
that.
Out the infographic. That's probably a pretty good summary of what's there.
To the infographic.
Yeah.
So I mean, the really cool thing about this is it's based on our like media services platform, I think, for Windows, you know, which some of that's available in IIS on Windows Server. But the, you know, the cool thing is it's not just for like, you don't have to have like a Silverlight front end, you know, or you know, it has to be an Xbox. Like it works on, you know, Android, iPhone, HTML5, like a whole, you know, tons
Xbox,
of different
Windows Phone.
Yep.
The list just goes on there.
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much every, you know, every possible format of streaming video you would want. So really, really cool. It's just a preview now, but I suspect that it'll become a very interesting part, and some of our partners will do some really cool stuff with it.
Right.
So,
what else have you got?
Cool. So the next bit of news here we have is we announced the Microsoft Accelerator for Windows Azure Startups, and not to be confused with sometimes our Windows Azure accelerators, right?
We sometimes, for web roles.
Yes, for web roles or various things like that. So this is basically an incubation type program for startups where if you're accepted into the program, you get I think they actually invest in your startup. They give you, I think, $20,000 investment, some other mentoring, yeah, things like that, and then you get a whole bunch of free Windows Azure. I think $60,000 of Windows Azure, along with like, you know, help and mentoring, yeah, and all
the,
this access.
I think the $60,000 is for BizSpark Plus, so it's probably worth mentioning to everyone else out there that there is another program just plain BizSpark,
yep,
where you can go on the WindowsAzure.com website. If you follow the links there, you'll find the benefits you get there. So there's also, you know, I think it's around $1,500 to $3,500 worth, mm-hmm, of Azure consumption a month available for BizSpark startups.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we have sort of different layers of BizSpark now, which, yep, I mean, and we have Website Spark, all kinds of different programs. I mean, we have a whole, you know, depending on which one's right for your company, but I think the point is, as you said, most of them give you at least, you know, different amounts or some amounts of Windows, yeah, Azure. So, yeah, a lot of ways for startups or web developers or you know, things like that to actually, yeah, get free Windows Azure.
Even MSDN subscribers.
And MSDN subscribers. Yep. Yeah. So we're working really hard to make it so that no one has to pay for Windows Azure. I think the goal is, right, that you get started for free, yeah, when you're a startup. You know, we kind of help you out in the beginning, and then hopefully, you know, you get really big and become the next Facebook or something, and then we make a lot of money off of you. But really, you know, nice to get a lot of free hosting in the beginning.
That's right.
Yep.
So, cool. All right. So not, like I said, not too much news for today. So we're going to jump in, and Michael's going to show us some demos, some of the stuff he's been working on the Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets.
Perfect. Thank you, Nate. Scoot this over here. So we didn't do a massive amount of release changes in the 2.2.2 release, which mostly we spent all of our time updating the version number just to make it nice and long and complicated. But the two main things that we really did is made it where you can create a PowerShell script without having to add the snap-in or the module. So I'm doing this on Windows 8.
So for those who haven't used it ever before, do you want to give us like a 2-second on what what these are? I mean, so I guess the naming is sort of self-evident, yeah. Right?
Right. Where can I get them as well?
Oh, so yeah. Hold on. Patience. Okay. So one thing at a time. So the first thing I want to show is we now have an icon in your start menu. Before, you didn't even have an icon in your start menu. We didn't feel complete until we cluttered up your start menu a little tiny bit. Regular Windows 7, you'll have a link for Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets, and you'll also have a README doc. I think my setup is currently not working exactly right on Windows 8, which we'll get back to that. But on regular Windows 7, you'll actually have a PowerShell prompt that will pop up, and it will save you the expense of typing in add PSS snap in WAPPS commandlets. And what this signifies is it basically loads up PowerShell commandlets, all the commandlets that you can run into your PowerShell session. The other option is you can call import module and accomplish the same thing depending on how you install it. So to answer the next question, how do you actually get these guys? You can go to wappowershell.codeplex.com and you can download these, and we are up to 1,190 downloads so far.
Cool.
So on Windows 7, we made it a lot easier to get started. Windows 8, not quite there yet. Our next release will address that. So the next thing that we added is we added the ability to persist all your subscription information. If you've ever done Windows Azure PowerShell before, you'll kind of notice that it's not super easy to get started. You have to know what your subscription ID is. You have to have a management certificate. So if we flip over to the management portal, you can kind of see where you get this information. So I have a subscription right here and with the hosted service in it and everything. And one of the things I need for to run PowerShell is I need the subscription ID. So the first thing you have to do is go into the portal and dig this information out. Second thing you have to do is upload a management certificate to the portal as well. So there's a couple of things you can do to make that a little bit easier, but the gist of it is it's you really have to get this stuff set up one time. So what was really hard about all this is you had to literally go through this initialization exercise every time you ran a PowerShell script. So if I wanted to do this, let me see, just to show you what this would actually look like. A little bit more real estate. You had to type in this code, not this code, but this code every time to run a PowerShell script. You had to get your subscription ID, you had to set your certificate, you had to set the subscription, and you had to select it. And what this does is it tells the commandlets, every commandlet from now on, use this information. So that's pretty useful, but prior to this last release, we never saved it. So you literally had to go type this up every time you made a new commandlet. So what we did instead is we actually, every time you call set subscription, we save that information to a file. So I can call get subscription, and you can see it has all my subscription information in here. This is actually saved to a file in your user profile, so you only have to do it once. Then new scripts, you just type in select subscription, whatever you gave the subscription name, and it automatically loads this.
Cool.
So our last release was really all about making this stuff a little bit more usable. So the next thing I want to show you guys is a little bit of just kind of a tour of what all the kind of stuff you can do with PowerShell. I think one of the more popular topics is diagnostics. So before I do that, I'll just kind of give you the tutorial on how you get around in PowerShell. So first thing you need to do on any of them, any script you ever write, is call select subscription. This is once you've set your subscription, it's all saved in your profile. This is how you set the current subscription or for whatever your script is gonna do. And if you're writing a script that manages, you know, multiple subscriptions, it's really as simple as switching them just with the names. Okay. And anything that happens here will work on Azure Pub. Anything that happens here will work on Azure Pub 1.
Cool, cool.
So now that we've selected our subscription, just a few of the commandlets that I want to show off is get hosted service. So this commandlet basically gives you everything that you see here. It will go to your subscription that'll list all the hosted service sites that you have. So I can run this guy, and down at the output, you can see that we have our service name. And what's significant about that is this is how you manipulate these the different services. We have commandlets that can increase or decrease the number of instances, and it all works off this information, the service name or whatever.
And what is the output it's showing here?
What it's showing your service name, it's showing your subscription ID and your certificate. And this is those two pieces of information right there are really useful for debugging. If you're writing a script that has manipulating 20 different subscriptions, yep. and you want to know what which one it was working on here. This one right here is the actual behind-the-scenes URL okay. that the API uses to communicate to your service.
Okay.
So if you were writing just pure REST APIs against the Windows Azure Management Service, this is the API or the URL that endpoint that you would be using for those APIs.
Okay. And this is just because this one's a GET request. It just show it. You're just pulling from that URL. But if you if you were to actually like push data, does it show you kind of all the settings and parameters that it posts along with it?
It doesn't today.
Okay.
It will tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So one of the other things I want to talk about in this one is some of the work that we're currently working on. I can't tell you everything because it's some really, really interesting stuff. But one of the things we're doing is we're adding a verbose switch to all the commandlets. So if you ever wonder why your commandlet's failing, the errors from the API just aren't overly detailed, you add verbose, it'll literally dump out the entire request, everything you're passing to the API. Really useful for debugging or just trying to figure out how the APIs work.
Are you able to sort of... I noticed that when you went down through the output there that it didn't show anything about the actual role or the instances within
it. Right. So, again, the APIs are a little tricky.
Right.
Get hosted service returns back the hosted service. If you want to know what's inside the service, we got a different API for that. And this is all the really good stuff is inside of your deployment.
Right.
How Azure services are structured is we have the hosted service at this level, and this is your deployment. You can see in the portal. And the deployment is what actually has all the configuration and information about your roles. So if I type in...
The hosted, by deployment you mean, like basically the hosted service is what has the, you have a production and a staging.
Right.
That's your deployment is either your staging environment or your production environment.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
So I can say git deployment, name of the service, which is Woodgrove Debug, and exactly the slot. I need to tell it whether it's going to be production or staging. I don't remember if this one's in production or staging, so we'll find out. So it's in production. And here's where you can see all your roles information. You have all the different role instances. You have the actual configuration, everything that you've actually deployed in that configuration. You can download and look at, see your certificate encrypted information, all your different settings. So if you ever wondered whether diagnostics were enabled, you can actually see it all in here.
So could you script changes to the, say, the instance count of one of these?
You can. Set role instance count.
Cool.
See, this is great because you guys don't even know PowerShell, the command.
No, yeah.
You're just assuming, wow, that'd be useful. Yes, we can actually do that. So service name, Woodgrove DBG, and role name, and we'll pick Mortgage Rates Web Project. And counts, we'll spin that up to 2. Oop, sorry, it does want the slot. So this will actually, what it's really doing behind the scenes, it's doing a lot of interesting work. It's calling git deployment. It's getting your configuration, all the XML stuff we just saw. It's literally modifying the XML inline and updating the deployment. So it's doing an inline update.
So it's actually, and so that one PowerShell command that isn't necessarily a one-to-one mapping between a REST service call. You're actually doing several things in that one command.
Right.
The whole point is to automate common scenarios, right? Okay.
Right. So we're actually doing quite a bit of work in that one little commandlet. We're actually retrieving the XML configuration, modifying it, and calling an update. So we're calling multiple APIs in this one call.
Yep. So that API that's being called is the Windows Azure Service Management API, right?
Right. Correct. So, of course, something's not right. Okay, there it goes. So it's actually updating. You can see that we do now have two instances there. So we were a single instance, but now we're spun up to 2.
Cool.
So a couple other cool things we can do with the PowerShell commandlets, in addition to just viewing and changing your information, we can do a lot of different diagnostics work. So I have some helper functions, because I'm the first to admit that our diagnostics story on Windows Azure is a little difficult to deal with. And the PowerShell stuff makes it a lot easier, but it's still little difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the other things that we're working on in the next release is try to make these even better than are now. So I have a helper function here called get diag roles. And if you've ever done Windows Azure Diagnostics with PowerShell, you probably ran across it, because I have all these samples posted up on my blog. So if you ever need to download these guys, just go to michaelwasham.com, click the Diagnostics tag, and they're all there. But what GetDiagRoles does is it gets all the all the roles that are enabled for diagnostics, and it passes it to another commandlet called PrintDiagnosticsSettings, and even color codes all the different settings. So you can see my mortgage rates PDF generator, I really have nothing configured. I don't have any Perpmon counters, no Windows event logs, so it's currently not set to do any kind of transfer or any kind of logging. So what I can do from PowerShell, this is something you don't have to do in your code, you don't have to put in your on-roll start, you don't have to do all this predefined, you can actually just do it at any time, as long as your roles were configured to have diagnostics enabled. We can go into using PowerShell, we can enable Perpmon counters. So this is just a little function I wrote that uses the new performance counter commandlet and some of the predefined counters. And in a comment, if you ever wonder where you actually get all these counter names, there's a bunch of different utilities you can run. There's a Perfmon, or there's a PowerShell commandlet to figure out which ones you want to set.
And this applies to all roles, right?
This applies to all roles.
Sorry, all instances of a particular role, or are you targeting...
You can really do either way. So I can do get diag roles, and I can pipe this out, set Perfmon counters to it. And what that will do is it'll get all the roles, and it'll actually set these Perfmon counters on every instance in a role. You can actually make this much more refined, where you could literally set it on one instance and not even...
If you just wanted a sample.
Right, if you just want a sample and you don't want to apply it to your entire entire deployment.
Cool.
So we can go ahead and run this. It'll loop through all the roles that are diagnostics enabled and set these Perfmon counters.
That's really nice.
So let me show you the output of that, just to prove that it actually did do something.
We trust you, but
no one trusts PowerShell. No one trusts me. Yeah. So you can see the counters actually got deployed. Right. So right now we're actually logging this data and transferring over to storage. A couple of minutes, we'll actually have some data that we could actually take, download, and look at.
Great. Awesome.
So that's kind of the gist of how you use Perfmon or the diagnostics. Is there's commandlets for setting counters or setting your Windows Azure logs, setting your Windows event logs, and you can also download them. We have get Perfmon log counters, we have get Windows Azure event logs, and we have get Windows Azure log. And you also have commandlets for downloading all your IS log files as well. So literally any file that you have on the files on the your roles, you can configure through diagnostics to automatically transfer over to storage and download them.
Cool.
So you've done this without having to redeploy a role or edit code or anything like that. It's all done externally through...
Correct. And that's a good point, because a lot of our samples, a lot of our previous guidance has been whenever you define your deploy your application to have all your diagnostics pre-configured.
Yep.
And that's
in-app start, like in your code.
Right, in your code. But that begs a question, what happens if you forgot a counter?
If something's going wrong in production and you want to...
Right, and you want to add more.
Yep.
So I think the better approach is to enable diagnostics in each of your roles, but not configure it. Just have the module, have the storage account set, and deploy your app, and then through PowerShell, or there's a bunch of other nice tools that can basically allow you to configure all your diagnostics after the fact. Makes it really great for just collecting some base counters to make sure everything's working, or if something's going wrong, you can actually increase that, get a lot more verbose, get a lot more detailed on what you want to capture.
Cool.
So kind of a little world tour of PowerShell. I want to show a few other things. So we also have some counters or some commandlets around SQL Azure. So the first one I'm going to run is get SQL Azure Server. Basically shows we have no services or we have no databases. So if I go in here, and sure enough, there's no databases. So what I want to do is just show you how quickly and easily you can spin up a new SQL Azure Server. So I'm going to go ahead and set the admin login. I'll set the password, and they actually do have password requirements here. You have to make it almost complicated. Hopefully that's complicated enough.
That's your bank password.
That is. That's my account at Citigroup, Wells Fargo, WAMU. So we need to set the location, what data center it's going to be in. So I'll say we'll put this one in North Central U.S. I think that's all we'll require.
Does the text there for the location have to be you know, a specific string?
It does. It's the actual name of the data center.
Okay.
So one of the new commandlets we're adding in the next version is a git Azure locations commandlet, so you don't have to go look this up on a blog somewhere.
Nice.
And that occurred to me whenever I was trying to figure out all the different data center names, and I couldn't find a convenient place that listed them all, so we just added a commandlet. It'll make life a lot easier.
Any plans to abbreviate those? Or?
Okay, so no. As of now, we're really not going to be abbreviating the data centers, and the reason is you really won't have to anymore. You can call what the commandlet will look like will be git locations. And you could literally, if you wanted it to be in North, you could do something like where and reuse that in your scripts later, right? So you don't you don't have to type it in because it can be a variable that you can reuse without typing in 500 places.
I suppose I was thinking like it'd be nice to put like n, but then I guess at some point we'll probably have multiple. Like, do we have multiple data centers that start with n?
Could be.
Yeah. So that's
eventually.
I guess that could be a problem.
It could be.
I'm really lazy. So
maybe we'll get a data center that says North, you know, Seattle or something. Yeah. You never know. Okay, so this is a commandlet that really all it does is it spins up a new SQL Azure instance. And I do want to capture that because I want to do something useful with it. So the first thing you need to know about SQL Azure is you spin up a database or spin up a new server, you can't connect to it because it requires firewall rules.
Yep.
Exactly. So we have commandlets to automate that as well. The next question that you say is, okay, so what IP address do I use? Do I need the IP? You know, to allow the firewall in, do I use this IP address from my laptop, the IP address from my proxy server? What is it? You probably don't know the IP address from your proxy server. So the SQL Azure REST APIs actually support the functionality of reporting back to you what IP address you're connecting to them on.
Oh, nice.
So we have a flag here, use IP address detection, that will basically magically figure out where you're connecting from. Hmm. So the last thing I need to do is give it the rule name. And I think that's it. Oh, I'm sorry. I do need one more thing. I need the server name. This is why I got this guy for. And I could just pipe that variable in, but I already know the property, so I can do that. So I'm going to go ahead, run that, and see if I did anything wrong. Okay. So as long as I didn't get a bunch of red down here, that means it worked. And nice. You can also see the rule it returned back. Shows my start IP address. So this is the IP address I'm actually connecting back.
Cool.
So now you can essentially script anything perhaps to create a DB
right.
in PowerShell, or if you want to use SQL Management Studio, you can now connect directly to that DB.
So I could literally spawn off and run OSQL or BCP, or assume that works with SQL Azure, and actually connect out to the SQL server and do some kind of automated import, all from just this simple two-line command lines.
Cool.
And you can see over in the portal, if I didn't refresh yet. Yeah, you gotta wait for it to refresh. So we'll load it up, and we'll see our database.
We can edit out the awkward delay.
So we can see the server's been created there.
You can see the server's been created, and you can see firewall rules one, and there's a firewall we just created.
Nice.
SQL Azure from PS. Okay, so the final thing I want to show, there's a lot more in PowerShell, but just some of the cool things I want to show off is some of the work we did around automating Traffic Manager. So if you're not familiar with Traffic Manager is a DNS service that allows you to do load balancing at a data center level. So I could literally deploy an application in North Central US in Europe, and I can tell Traffic Manager, you know, this is the top level domain, these are my two cloud services, and I want you to load balance between those two. And it may not make sense to do round robin load balancing between Asia or Europe and North America. So what they have is different load balancer algorithms, performance, failover, and I think just round robin is the
round robin one. Always, I've never been able to think of a scenario where that would be better.
When does that work?
Like when would you want to round robin between? I mean, maybe two data centers in the same.
Same area,
but they're really so far apart that even on two sides of the same continent seems like it's you would always
performance, right? It seems the most logical.
If somebody has an idea of why that would be useful, please tweet us and
we need to know.
I mean it, Is it the default? Or like, is there a?
There's not a default.
You have to choose one, which is good.
I do like the failover option as well, because you could imagine that you've got a deployment that may be reasonably substantial with, you know, 10, 100 instances here in North America. You may also have a failover.
A hot failover.
Yeah, or, over in US.
Right.
Not US, but Europe or something like that. Running just a couple of instances. But if you then go and add the auto-scaling patterns and practices application block to your deployments, then if this one were to fail over with 10 or 100 instances, then the failover through Traffic Manager could go over to this, and then it could scale right up to be serving all those requests.
But you can do performance and failover, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can do performance and failover. If one of the DCs go down in a performance, it'll go over.
But that's still it still gets me back to what is round robin for?
Right. Round robin? Yeah, good question. I'm sure a traffic manager PM is going to email us and say, "You dummy."
there might be an obvious scenario. I don't know, but yeah, we'll maybe get someone on the show to explain that.
Right. Okay. So what I'm going to show is kind of a long script. It's literally how to deploy two hosted services into two data centers and then configure Traffic Manager. So I got a bunch of snippets because I'm not going to type all this in.
I think we should awkwardly wait while you type.
I think
all
you
in
should.
Manually.
Yeah, just
we won't. We won't do any editing. We'll just all sit here in silence.
No,
for
we should.
A couple
we should
minutes.
Edit it and make it go really fast. So I'm, you know, going
like
all
my,
crazy.
Like my node video that's like 5,000 words a minute.
So the first thing I'm showing is this is your, if you've never done automated deployment from PowerShell, which probably most people haven't, is you need to deploy your package file and your configuration. These are just some an application I already have ready and just declaring some variables for them. The next thing you need to do is I'm setting up a bunch of different variables. I'm assuming these services aren't taken because I haven't actually checked them in a while. But the variable names are, these are going to be my different data centers names. So Woodgrove, North Carolina, or North Central, South Central. I know I probably should have done EU, but, and I'm creating a storage count in each one of them. And these are the actual data center names. And this right here is my top level traffic manager name. So instead of going to woodgrovenc.cloudup.net, you're going to go to woodgroveustm.trafficmanager.net, I think .net or .com, one of the two. I think it's .net. But this top level URL is what Traffic Manager uses to redirect traffic back to the other services. So your vanity URL, your actual domain name, would have a reference back to this Traffic Manager URL. It's kind of your top level internal URL is the way you want to think about it. From there, we can actually create our hosted services. And what we're doing is I'm calling new hosted service, giving it the label and location. And another thing that I forgot to mention is label is now optional in new hosted service. So you don't have to type that in every time. It'll actually just use your service name if you ignore it.
Oh, okay. Is that a new feature in the management APIs or just in PowerShell?
No, just PowerShell.
Okay.
I got tired of typing in dash label.
Okay. In PowerShell it automates because I was going to say in the UI it's still
requiring. Yeah,
in the REST layer it's still required, but your commandlets. Okay.
Exactly.
Which seems reasonable.
I'm just trying to lower the amount of typing you have to do. That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
One other thing I do want to mention, if you're all used to using get operation of status, and what this means is whenever you call a new hosted service, it doesn't wait for it to complete before it proceeds. It get operation status says, hey, hold on, let's wait to make sure it worked before we move on. It just basically it's an asynchronous call and we make it synchronous. The next version of the commandlets, all the commandlets are synchronous by default, so you no longer have to type this. I'm sure there's still someone going to be saying, you know, I really needed to spin up and deploy 50 hosted services all async. Sorry, got to make it typing easier. So what we're doing is we create the two hosted service, and I actually then, once they're created, I get a reference back to them. That way we can do some other cool stuff with them. So I created the hosted service. Now I'm going to add my management certificates. So every hosted service to do any kind of operations on it requires you to have a management cert on it. And I already have a PFX file on my file system that I'm just going to pass in and deploy that. Next thing I want to do is create storage accounts. And you can tell, this is my 2.0 syntax. The new syntax is storage account name. I'm trying to be a little bit more consistent. So when I call new storage account, I have to, I'm specifying the different data centers it's going to be created in.
Question, all these snippets, are they available on your blog or they're
the majority,
batched up in the toolkit?
The majority of them are on my blog. All the diagnostics ones are for sure. I have a few posts on deployment. Actually I have this entire sample up there because I posted it up as a sample a few months ago.
Cool, okay.
Next thing you need to do is whenever you create the service, it's created by default, not started, so I start it. A new change in the new commandlets. I'm like, you know, why is that there? And I noticed in November the REST API has changed to allow you to auto-start service when you create one. So I updated the new hosted service commandlet in the next release to automatically start your services.
Oh, nice.
So this entire block of code you no longer have to do on the next build.
So you just set it off and then you're done.
Yeah, it starts. I give you a flag, so if you for some reason you don't want it started, it'll keep it turned off. But by default, it's actually on.
It seems the model is like the easiest way is the default.
Right.
Which seems to make sense.
Easiest and less typing.
Less typing.
But still having the flexibility of doing whatever you need to do.
But I still have to type North Central U.S. instead of just N.C.
Right.
So I'm. Still not the least amount of typing possible.
It's better than it was. Okay, so here is where we actually set up the top level traffic manager profile. We're setting up traffic manager, and this is the name that we declared up here, TM profile name. And this is the top level domain name that I just mentioned, and I was right, it is trafficmanager.net. Almost forgot. And what we're doing with this profile is we're then adding the endpoints it can manage. So this is our Woodgrove NC and Woodgrove SC, adding it to the list of endpoints. And then whenever we actually create this profile, these are going to be the two endpoints that Traffic Manager is going to monitor. Next thing we need to do is configure a health check, because Traffic Manager doesn't just say, you know, I'm going to redirect, I'm going to send you traffic whether you're alive or dead. It actually gives you the URL where you can configure a URL, a URI that responds with a 200 if it's healthy. Anything other than the 200 is not healthy.
So your application, actually, you have to have an endpoint that's designed to be a health check. Like
right.
It tests the SQL connection or whatever
right.
it may be and then returns a 200.
Right.
How do you know, I can't remember, how long does it have to return that 200?
Don't know. Okay. I should know, but I don't remember.
It has to allow some time because you potentially are going to be doing several, you know, like check SQLs, table storage. Things
right,
like
and that. I'm almost positive that it will also give the capability of retrying too. So if you're hitting a site that takes a long time to initialize, for instance, has to compile pages, it'll actually come back.
Mm.
So as you can see, creating the definition is where the most of the work goes in. Here's your DNS time to live. So this is the amount of time that that we keep these DNS entries in cache. So the lower, the faster your failover will occur. Because if an entire data center goes down, your application goes down, the DNS record is still going to be available for however long you configure this.
And is that in seconds?
Yeah. That is in seconds, yeah.
There you go.
And the advantage of the lower the time, the faster your failover takes
right.
place. But also, if it's too low, like potentially it would slow down requests, right?
DNS recursion will happen more often, right?
So like you wouldn't want it so low that like they would request the page and then by the time they request like some AJAX call a second later they have to resolve DNS again.
Yeah. So 300 I think is from what I remember it might be the minimum that you can set it. It might be a little lower.
Okay.
But you can up that range a lot. And here's where you set the load balancing method, performance, round robin, whatever, the monitors, endpoints. And status, because you can actually configure all a traffic manager and then not enable it, which is useful for testing. You can actually turn on and turn off individual endpoints from PowerShell as well. And I think that's all we have to do. Now, I haven't tried any of this in a long time, so I have no idea if it'll work. I know it'll work. I just don't know if it'll work on my machine. I don't know if my PFX is in the right place, all that good stuff. One thing I'm not also positive about is whether I have these URLs are available, which brings me to the next thing to point out. Added a new commandlet to check whether your DNS name is available or storage name is available. That way you don't have to get an exception before you know whether it worked or not.
Feels like one of those, but there's still
more. I know. One more thing I want to show, because this is either going to work and it's going to run and look beautiful, or it's going to crash. So before it runs beautiful, I want to show one more thing.
All right.
So everyone that has used PowerShell up to this point is familiar that we have two parameters with every commandlet that makes an API call, subscription ID and certificate. And originally, we had allowed you to specify this per call so you can be authenticated. Then we moved the certificate and subscription ID up to the a persistent file so you no longer have to call it every time. The next release, these two parameters are going to be completely gone. So just a heads up, you'll have to do a lot of deleting in your scripts to make them work. At least it's not replacing, it's just deleting. All right, so now, the moment you've all been waiting for. I'm sure everyone's just in suspense whether the script is going to run or not.
Need some drums.
That's right. Succeeded. Oh, see, there's a red error. Uh-oh. Okay, so demo died. Oh, so see, it still worked. You know what happened? Add certificate. My PFX is not on the machine.
Oh, well, you want to try it again?
We can try. It's doing something. Something succeeded. It's probably creating storage accounts.
That was a little anticlimactic.
I know it was.
we have like literally probably 100,000 people watching at this very moment at any given time.
And they're all going
millions. Maybe.
They're all going, you know, deploying this to both data centers and Scene Traffic Manager would have been the highlight of my day.
Yeah. They're you watching know. Like what are the
my boss.
I don't know what the popular TV shows are, but we're like I think number 4 or 5 in the.
Jeez, we've
Dancing with the Star. Is that show still? That's all I can remember.
How is that anywhere near the top?
I don't know. Isn't that one of the pop? I don't know. How I don't know what kids are watching these days.
How long has it been since you watched TV?
I don't know.
So the moral to the story is always make sure that you have your certificates on the machine before you run a live demo.
But that seems like a reasonable.
It does.
That's the moral of this whole thing.
Right. This entire show is about making sure your certificates are on your machine.
That's the tip of the week. We actually don't have to do the real tip of the week. We already covered it.
We invented it.
We invented it during the show. I feel like we should do a tip of the week sometime where we go back like 30 seconds in the show and repeat a lesson we learned. And now the tip of the week. Remember that time we had? We're going to have to do that. I thought we were waiting for. Aren't you to fix it?
You've
just given up.
I gave up, honestly.
Okay. Months of work on these PowerShell commandlets. Just
I gave up.
Just delete
done.
Them. We're not. Never mind. We're not even shipping them.
I could actually try to fix it, but one of the deployments worked. So we got to wait for it to finish deploying. Then we got to go back and delete it. Fix the PFX. Yeah.
All right.
But still,
that's a future episode.
Very powerful script if you've got that PFX on you.
Right. If you have the PFX there, it's awesome. Yeah.
So what? I mean, you showed us a lot of like, you showed us a lot of things you can do, right? But what?
Right.
I mean, what are some of the scenarios? I mean, is this geared toward the PowerShell? I sort of think of like an IT pro guy,
right.
Kind of managing a company's infrastructure. But also, is it useful for someone who wants to automate deployments?
Part of the build process.
Right. Yeah. There's a couple of things. Obviously, doing continuous build is a great example. You can automate everything in PowerShell. You can deploy. You can remove. You can delete. You can increase. So, from a continuous integration perspective, it's really useful. A couple of other areas. One I'm gonna show I can't actually run because Power GUI is still chugging along, is this check CPU utilization script. So what this one does is it actually goes off and samples the CPU counters on my web roll. So you could see how you could literally make an auto-scale block just out of PowerShell, where you don't have to run it in your application. It's probably a better idea to actually have it in your application, but it's something that you could use just from a monitoring standpoint to query your performance logs, maybe send alerts. You could literally build an entire monitoring solution out of this application.
Someone's going to go and actually run their production monitoring application on their laptop now because
they should.
I hope that someone just like, oh, well, I might get busy tonight and they leave like something running and then go home. Oh, I forgot I put it to go to sleep.
I closed the lid.
I lift the power out.
Yeah.
I don't have my battery pack. The site's going to die.
Yeah.
But it's all about automation. Anything you can do in the portal, you can do from PowerShell.
Cool.
And that's the whole point. It's still to stop you from doing redundant tasks.
Yep.
Are there things that aren't in the portal that are available in the service management API that you do still wrap?
Good question. Diagnostics, obviously, because there's no portal UI for diagnostics at all.
Have you built PowerShell commandlets for the media streaming services that were
announced? Not yet.
Minutes ago.
On your news article, it said management REST API. I'm like, we need a commandlet for that. So a couple other interesting areas for this is developer setup, or if you're an ISV and you need to set up your application. Mm. So you have your installation, you're deploying it, you know you need to create a SQL Azure database, you know you need to set the firewall rules, you can literally automate the entire setup. Hmm. Or if you are an IT pro and you're managing a team of developers, or not managing, because IT pros never manage developers, but you're responsible for the infrastructure the developers use, whenever you give them their new workstation, you could literally just run a script that provisions their test database that they need to work against.
Like staging environments.
Give them their own little app to play in and debug.
Cool.
So just automation. That's all PowerShell's about.
Cool.
Yeah, really, really useful stuff.
Right. And wait for the next release. It's going to be way better.
Cool. Do you have a date on that yet, or still when you kind of get to it?
This summer, springish.
Okay.
This year.
Okay. Cool. This year. All right. So by the end of this year.
That's right. Hopefully earlier.
All right. Hopefully. Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. It's really, really cool stuff. And I'm not a PowerShell expert, but it seems pretty compelling, because I mean there are a lot of things where one of the things I was even thinking of is like setting up a demo. You know, if you were setting up a demo environment, like for us, if we go to like tech ed or something and are giving a talk, like we could actually use these to sort of, okay, well, I know I need this, this, and this, and
right.
and you know, get my storage account or my my service bus namespaces ready, things
right.
like that.
So. Think about some other areas just going forward with the Windows Server. We're really pushing the headless concept, right? Where you're a server administrator, but you don't have a GUI. You're at a prompt, you have PowerShell at your disposal. Anything you can do on Windows Server, you know, translates to, I'm building a hybrid environment, running on Server Core.
Yep.
I need to talk to my Azure environment. I need to spin up new instances. It's all about making the headless experience much better.
Yeah, interesting. You know,
that way you're not constantly jumping back between desktops and portals, and you literally can get things done a lot faster by just running the simple command.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn that command first, but
once you've
mastered it,
especially if you're managing the hybrid scenario,
right.
on-prem, off. I mean, there's obviously a lot of PowerShell scripts for just managing Windows Server
right.
or things like that.
Spinning
on-premise.
Up new servers in Hyper-V, for instance.
Yeah, so
and
you
spinning
could,
up new ones in the cloud.
Yeah, that's really cool. Cool. All right. Well, that's. Nice. Yeah, very, very exciting stuff. Well, not the end. We have many exciting.
He
says he never watched this.
I'm going to start now. I know I said that last time I was on.
You have to watch this. Oh, you didn't even watch the last one you're on?
Okay. I will.
Okay.
I'm going to watch both of them now.
Shameful.
I got to improve.
Yeah.
You can only improve.
We're trying to boost our ratings here. We're trying to get above American Idol.
It's the best show on TV, honest to God.
Once we pass, All right, well, I think...
Okay, so. Well, given that's the case, I think it's that time of the week.
We were explaining him the new tip of the week thing. He was complaining that we didn't change anything on the show, and I explained that we have changed plenty. We no longer do this, we do this.
Well, see, you have to make it your own, you know?
Yeah,
that's what they always show on the reality shows. You didn't make that your own.
Yeah.
You have to own it.
Yes, well, I don't know. We're not that creative, as you can tell. Yes.
Right.
Tip of the week. I like it.
Dragon Sword, Mastodon, Triceratops. Yeah. We're good. We're ready to morph into action. Six, working together to fight evil. Look, they're coming together.
And we're back. All right. That was a mildly enthusiastic. So we were talking during the break. We've yet to fully let go of Wade's spirit. So
we miss him so bad.
Yeah, it was for those that saw my tweet and photo that I'll put a link to that photo where I was in Nick's office a couple weeks ago, or I guess it was like 2 weeks ago.
Something like that.
And he was happened to be watching Cloud Cover, but he paused it, and I walked in, and like Wade was just on his screen, and he was working on his laptop, and it was like, okay, and he told me he missed him so much that he just leaves it up on the screen. So
I don't think it was a lie. I think I saw that same image.
No, I took a picture of it. I tweeted it. Yeah, so we'll put that up. But in that regard, we have Wade again as the tip of the week, which honestly, I tried to find something else because we've been really. Wade's been really kind of on the show too much. He's left in our last three shows, but there wasn't actually much blogging this week. So if anyone has an idea for a tip of the week or wants to write an awesome blog post, send us an email or tweet us,
and tweet it to Cloud Cover Show.
Cloud Cover Show, yeah. So
or email it to Wade. Let him write a blog post. And it's certain to be on here.
Please, everyone, email Wade directly or tweet him. Ask him to write a blog. Ask him to what you want your blog post about, and then we'll cover his post next week. I really hope that happens. All right. So anyway. Sorry for wasting everyone's time. So Wade's tip of the week has to do with table storage. There's a property you can set on there's a property you can set on your table context that actually allows you to ignore resource not found exceptions. So the default behavior, which I always found a little confusing, it kind of makes sense with .NET sort of normal programming practices, but normally if you query a row that doesn't exist, you get an exception. So you can actually set that though as an option. You can ignore that exception and then just return null. So some people might like handling the exceptions depending on what the scenario is.
Right.
I mean, if you really do expect it to be there, it makes sense to throw the exception. But if you're just checking, like, does this exist? If not, create it. You probably don't want to have to go through the handling the exception and not. Mm-hmm. So his tip is to set that property if you don't want it to throw the exception, and it'll will just turn.
The highlighted one?
Yeah, the highlighted row, that's all it is. And it'll just return, it'll return an empty.
Empty collection or null?
It returns the results, and he's using first or default on that. So
that's
key
right.
Will be
gotcha.
Null there.
So it'll be null. Yep. So yeah, I think pretty useful. And someone actually commented on the blog post that when they discovered this, they were able to remove a lot of try catches from their app. Yeah. So keep your code a little cleaner depending on the scenario.
Small but handy tip.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So yeah. That, I guess, is about our show for the day. So
yeah. Thanks for coming, Michael.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. So like you said, you just released. You released the updates fairly recently.
Yep.
We'll put a link to those on the post, and then you'll be releasing by the end of the year. So the next
quite a bit sooner, but
the next seven
before
or eight
the end
months,
of the year.
You'll be releasing updates for that. So great, cool. Well, as always, follow us on Cloud Cover Show, or comment on the post, or send us messages or tweets or
what's your Twitter handle?
MWashimMS. That's right.
He's right here.
He never watches the show.
I'm learning.
We've been beating that joke just dead completely.
How about we do it up here and here?
Everyone is, yeah. All right. Thanks for watching. We will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks.